area is still a danger, with an estimated 10% of thousands of bombs that were used still there, still unexploded. We can now welcome to the programme James Cowan, retired Major General and Chief Executive of the Halo Trust, a charity that's trying to deactivate these dangerous, dangerous explosives. Welcome to you, General.
Hello, John.
Hi. I mean, how big a job is it going to be clearing these mines and explosives?
It's going to be massive. I have two experiences. You've just mentioned my military experience. I was in Basra in 2003. But more recently, Halo has focused on the Middle East. We've had operations in Iraq, in Syria, in Libya, in Yemen, and on the West Bank. We understand about urban bomb disposal. But none of the cities that were destroyed in the various wars in the Middle East come anything like to the scale of Gaza. We're talking about a strip of 2.2 million people, hundreds of thousands of houses damaged in the fighting. The munitions come from two sources, those from Hamas with the tunnel system and the booby traps and weapon supplies. Vast amounts of Gaza is booby trapped and tunneled. And secondly, from the Israelis, air-delivered bombs, artillery ammunition, mortars, rockets. And what happens is, in an urban environment, is that when you drop a bomb, it's meant to detonate on impact. But if it comes through a roof, a second floor, a first floor, it slows down, and very often it doesn't go off.
Yes.
So there are many, many hundreds of thousands of tons of ammunition, we suspect, that needs to be dealt with. It's impossible for us to know precisely how much at this stage. But none of that reoccupation, none of that rebuilding, nobody can go to school, nobody can go to a hospital, nobody can use a road unless this ordnance is removed.
Absolutely enormous job. And how dangerous is it, James, for your teams to detect these mines, these unexploded mines, unexploded explosives, and deactivate them without getting into very serious danger?
Well, surprisingly, John, actually, the danger is not from the munitions, because we spend a lot of time training people to the very highest standards. No, my concern is different, actually. And it is that we cannot function inside of Gaza unless there is a sufficiently safe operating environment. Mm. And my concern at the moment is what you were describing earlier. We are seeing Gaza descend into clan violence, with different clans fighting each other and with clans fighting Hamas. And there is a security vacuum. Now, I saw that firsthand in Basra in 2003. But there we had a formed army. Where is the international security force? My estimation is you need a force of about 50,000 troops. That's got to be force generated from the nations of the region, Turkey, Egypt, Arab states. I don't see any sign of that being ready. And until that force is ready, I cannot see how it will be a safe enough environment for me to do the responsible thing and allow my people into Gaza.
Yeah.
It cannot function there. It will be too dangerous.
Right. So an indefinite period before you can safely send your teams in to do the job that is so important. We don't even have a security force in place. We don't even know what it's going to look like or precisely what it's going to do. Until then, we're in a sort of state of, I don't know, the whole process is rather frozen.
That's right. I mean, there's an amazing diplomatic triumph that President Trump has pulled off, and he should be given full credit for it. But the sheer scale of that diplomatic triumph has now caught the world unready for this. And it isn't all up to the Americans. It now will take a global effort to prepare the necessary forces. It isn't just the troops. It's the civilian effort as well necessary to help Gaza. So I'm calling today for a great acceleration to that process. It is a daunting prospect. The trouble is with politicians, the four words they fear most in the world are boots on the ground.
Yeah.
And they will have to put boots on the ground in order to secure Gaza for the future.
Yeah, I mean, the work your teams do, James, is just so important. But until you're able to do that job, we're seeing daily pictures flooding in of Gazans flooding back into that, into the strip, civilians, many of them, very many of them children, who are going to be in danger every day. I mean, unexploded mines and explosives, they form a particular danger to curious children, don't they?
They really do. I've just come back from Syria, and I saw that at first hand. You know, vast areas of urban Syria in cities like Aleppo and Damascus leveled by the war. children picking their way over this rubble, trying to play, trying to go to school, trying to live, and exposed to these incredibly dangerous and lethal munitions. And we've got to get to work to make it a safe environment.
Yes.
I mean, children are the most acutely vulnerable, but so is everybody else. You cannot be in a school, you cannot be in a hospital, you cannot travel down a road unless these weapons are removed.
And with your old army hat on, it's going to be quite a job to figure out, well, first of all, you know, in political terms, the composition of the security force, but also the job that it's there to do.
Yeah, well, it is a peacekeeping force, and it needs to be configured for peacekeeping. But peacekeeping requires some teeth. You've got to deal with people who want to step back from the ceasefire. But it requires also some sophisticated political understanding. You can't rely on violence alone. In fact, I would strongly encourage those who form this force not to rely on force. What it needs is local negotiation, a sensible analysis of the local polity in Gaza, to work with local people, create consent. Above all, be consensual, protect the people, deal by all means with terrorists. But the fundamental role of a security force, a peacekeeping force in Gaza, is to protect the people from further violence.
All right. Thank you so much, James, for coming on. That's retired Major General James Cowan of the Halo Trust.